Slicer Tangents is brought to you by Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the did we just hit a million order stage and everywhere in between. Sari and Hank, can you name anything that works so well? It's practically magic.
Dragonflies.
Toilets.
What? Yeah, okay. Well, here's one off the top of my head. How about selling with Shopify? Ooh. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and it helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Ooh. Not to mention, it's got award-winning customer support there to help you on your path to success. And those are just a few reasons to love Shopify. But Hank, what does your company, DFTBA, like so much about Shopify?
We've been using Shopify, I think, for over 10 years now, and it really has scaled extremely effectively with us. It is both a huge amount of information at your fingertips, but also in a way that makes it fairly easy to make the decisions you need to make, learn the things you need to learn, and do the things you need to do. It's all in there. And it's one of the great joys of my life is going into the Shopify backend and being like, look at all these people who wanted a thing that I had.
What a rich life you lead indeed.
And if you want to experience great joys like that too, I've got a magic trick for you. Poof. You can now try Shopify for a month for only $1. That's right. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in, and experience the little joys of looking at the back end of a store. shopify.com/tangents, all lowercase. Abracadabra.
Hello and welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive knowledge showcase. I am your host, Hank Green, and joining me this week, as always, is science expert Sari Riley.
Hello.
And also our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
What's up?
I have a question for you two that I would like to have a fight about.
Uh-oh.
The question is, what is the best flower?
I don't know any flower at all.
You don't know any flowers?
Roses.
Look, Sam, have you walked around Missoula, Montana this week? It's amazing out there.
I can see them. They don't have their name tags over them or nothing like that. I don't know what they are. I don't really like flower smell, to be honest with you.
Well, when the irises are up, you can come over to my house and I will stick your head in a bunch of irises. And you'll change your mind. It's the best smell in the world. But anyway, I don't care what your favorite smelling flower is. That's just one part of a flower. Tell me a good flower. I don't even care if it's your actual favorite.
I like bleeding hearts. They're nice.
What's a daisy? That's mine, I guess.
Wow.
Is that a boring one?
But no, it's nothing. It can be your favorite, but like, care a little bit about one of the greatest inventions of evolution. This is like, flowers are one of the great joys of my life. I'm just surprised that Sam, a man who takes a lot of joy in a lot of things.
Rachel's really into plants right now. We go to the plant store every weekend or so. And she's like, oh, would you like to, you should pick one out too. And it's just, these are all green. They got leaves. This one's purple. This one's like orange, but they're all kind of the same. I don't know.
All right. Well, you know, Sam, I'm going to let you live your life.
Thank you.
And I'm going to say that maybe my favorite flower is the arrowleaf balsam root.
That's a stupid flower.
Wow. Only because it seems to be Catherine's favorite flower, though she hasn't said this to me. But every time we're anywhere where there's a balsam root, she's like talking about it. She's talking about it for like minutes. And I'm like, I mean, it's one of the flowers. There's others around, but you like, she just loves them. Okay, every week here on SciShow Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts, and we're going to try to do that to you as well. So we hope that you are amazed and delighted. We also will try to stay on topic and fail at that. Our panelists are playing for glory. They're also playing for Hank Bucks, which I will award as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. There will be no actual crowns. Now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem. This week, it's from Sari.
It's just as well that your favorite smell might be very hard to divine. Transfix, nice. Like a spell, makes you yell, oh hell, or relax and feel just fine. Take Whoa. An oaky smell, a smoky smell, a low-key, kind of choky, cough and croaky smell. A fire at night can be a delight, but the cloud of ash might not sit quite right. So take a sweet smell, real neat smell, heat up a treat that you want to eat smell. Go to townie on a brownie, turn your frownie upside downy, but it might not win the crownie of the county fair. So take an old smell, a not quite mold smell, a tome bound with gold that never sold smell. Flip a page and you gauge the sage wisdom and the age, but it might be upstaged by something not kept in a cage. It's just as well that your favorite smell might be very hard to divine. But consider mine, the breeze of a pine with a hint of brine in the soft sunshine. Ooh, it all entwines. So you're grounded in earth while you're on cloud nine.
Wow. Harry wins the episode.
That was amazing. That was a Mary Poppins song.
Sari's like, I haven't done a poem in a while.
I gotta do a good one.
I'm gonna like make a children's book ready to go. We just need an illustrator.
It did have a swear word in it. So
yeah, we can change the hell.
That was beautiful. And our topic for the day is smell. And I guess now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to propose to you my definition of smell. It is a thing that we can detect through the receptors that connect to our olfactory nerves. Like, that is basically it.
Yeah, that's it.
That's
We're
it.
Done.
Well, like, because it's a human thing. Like, a smell doesn't exist outside of us.
Yes, it does.
Well, it has to be sensed by something for it to be a smell.
Yeah.
But there are things that we don't smell, like nitrogen, that we could smell if we had receptors for it, but we don't. And that's not a smell, even though it could be a smell if we smelled it. I'm just trying to be as eloquent as you just were in your poem and fail it.
It's a smell before you smell it, just like a chemical?
Yeah.
It's just one of many chemicals, and it's not necessarily a smell because it doesn't hit those mm-hmm. receptors. And no one's there to interpret it.
Right. And there are things that you can't smell because they're not hitting the receptors in your nose, like a rock, because it's a rock. You can't get in there.
Sure.
But there are also things that are getting there that aren't being detected. It makes me wonder if there is if there are systems that we have had to evolve to prevent ourselves from smelling the air, because if we could smell the air, we couldn't smell anything else. There's too much of it.
I think there's something evolutionarily to not smelling the fluid that the smell molecule is being carried in. So fish can smell.
Right.
What? They have olfactory organs. For them, the molecules just travel through the fluid of water instead of the fluid of air and end up touching their olfactory receptors. So I imagine that fish also don't smell water constantly. And so in some evolutionary pathway, we didn't sense the medium that the thing is in. We have a lot more olfactory sensors than we do taste buds. And so like our sense of smell is just so much more complex. And the fact that we can pull these particles, I guess we're not physically pulling them, but we're inhaling air and then detecting trace amounts of things. Whereas to taste something, we have to like stick it in our mouth and like place it on the taste buds for it to be there. Uh-huh. Chemosensation, which is like the umbrella term of taste and smell, we're just like sensing chemicals. Evolved so weirdly and so precisely to be able to let us smell. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, because smelling is nice.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love smelling stuff. Even stinky stuff is fun to smell, kind of.
For a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Just to be like, ooh, I smelled that. Did you smell that too?
Sometimes you lay one and you're like, wow.
Uh-huh. A little science miracle that you've cooked up for yourself.
Sari, did you find out anything interesting etymologically with regards to smell?
I think that this is the first word where there isn't a good etymological origin. The Oxford English Dictionary says, quote, no doubt of Old English origin, but not recorded and not represented in any of the cognate languages.
Wow.
So one day we just started saying smell.
Well, it makes me think that like it was something that it was like a slang term that we stuck with.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe that's just the word we had for fart. And then we just like it became all smells.
Oh, no. I hope not.
Well, that means it's time to move on to our quiz portion of the show. This week, we're doing Blast from the Past, another...
Yay.
Are you ready? I have three facts for you. One of them is true. Two of them are lies. They're all smell facts because smell is a very important part of how we experience the world. And so we have been making smells and things that smell and things that don't smell for a while. And with more knowledge about how we define and experience smell, scientists and engineers have developed tools and technologies to enhance our experience of scent. The following are three creations of smell science, but only one of them is a true creation of smell science. Fact number one, scientists applied drops of scent molecules that cover the whole spectrum of smell onto an absorbing pad, and then they placed the pad into a sniff jar to create a special vapor. Because it kind of contains the whole spectrum of smell, while white contains the whole spectrum of light, they call this olfactory white. And people say that it smells neither good nor bad, which is, I guess, what you would think.
Wait, it's a smell that smells like everything at once. Is that basically
it? Doesn't smell like everything at once. It just smells like nothing in particular.
Okay.
You know how I feel like go to and you put all the sodas in one cup at the Burger King?
Yeah.
And then it's like, that doesn't taste like any particular soda, but no matter which ones you put in, it always tastes like that.
Uh-huh.
That's like soda white. And this would be smell white.
Thank you for putting it in terms I understand.
Fact number two, scientists mixed together a nasal spray made from unscented odor receptor antagonists. These are chemicals that can temporarily disable or blind your odor receptors and block them from taking in other odors. And when injected into the nose, the spray acts like a kind of smell blindfold to protect the user from unsavory smells. Or fact number three, scientists decided that they wanted to create the rosiest rose smell, so they mixed together a bunch of key scents from different roses until they made a rose smell so rosy smelling that 95% of people chose that like rosy smell that they created from when they asked them to pick out the rose smell from a lineup of what turned out to be rose smells. So they were all different roses, but they picked the one that they had created as the rosiest rose. So the three different facts I have for you are, one, we have olfactory white, a smell that contains smells from all over the smell spectrum. Two, a nasal spray that can block out unsavory smells. Or three, scientists making the rosiest rose that people pick when asked to pick out a rose from a lineup of roses.
Yeah, I don't know. I truly don't have, like sometimes I get a scientific foothold in a truth or fail question. This, I know nothing. I can't smell very good. I don't know very much about noses. And these all sound realistic.
I really like the idea of a smell blindfold, though. That seems like it would come in. That one seems like it would come in handy. And the rest of them are just like, well, who cares? But maybe it's so handy that it couldn't possibly be true.
Yep, that my brain went through that whole thing too. I was like, that one sounds the most useful. Like something that people would actually spend time and money researching is like antagonists for your nose receptors. But
your brain must work way faster than mine because it took me that long for my brain to like work it all out. How'd you do it without saying all of it out loud?
I just don't talk very much. And my brain just goes, woo, all the time.
Oh, no. I'm the exact, like, actually the exact opposite.
Because I truly don't have anything more to talk about. I'm just going to say, the rosiest rose, because it seems like something that scientists would do to prove that they could and be like, ha-ha, we did it. And maybe sell it to a perfume company or something like that.
Yeah, I think also might go for the rosiest rose because it just seems like it would make a good headline that then after you thought about it for a second, you'd be like, so what? Okay, I'm locked in, I guess.
That's the constant battle of the SciShow script where it's like, this sounds interesting until you start to write the script and then you're like, actually, this is dumb. But anyway, that was not the true fact.
Oh.
You both got it wrong. It was also not the nasal spray blindfold. You were correct that if that was a thing that existed, you probably would have heard of it because people would want to buy it.
Yeah.
It was, in fact, olfactory white.
Damn.
Weird. That one sounded the fakest.
I know. It totally sounds the fakest. I'm sorry. I made it too hard for you. I tried to make it a little less fake sounding by introducing the soda concept. But so olfactory white, my favorite thing about olfactory white is no one can explain to you what it smells like. So they asked a bunch of people what it smelled like. And see, here are four adjectives used to describe olfactory white. Fruity. Okay. Uh-huh. Perfumery. Oh. Okay. So perfumey is just like it smells like smells, but also medicinal and soapy. And you're like, what? So they mixed together different numbers of different kinds of scent molecules. So they were like, they were actually scent molecules that like represent different receptors in the nose. They're trying to like make sure that it's basically just completely overwhelming your system. Because one of the cool things about smell is that if you can smell one compound because it's binding to multiple scent receptors. And so the signal isn't I've bound to the lilac receptor. It's I've bound to like these four or five receptors, and all of those combined is the lilac smell, because only the lilac chemical binds to those five different receptors. Super cool and weird. So they would use up to 40 different chemicals and different mixtures to create this thing. If you mixed all of them together, everything would start to smell similar no matter which chemicals you were mixing together. Wow. So they were like, that must be white then, I guess. But you can't like buy it. I was trying to figure out how to sniff this sniff. I wanted to smell it. I want to smell it real bad. But there's not even anybody I could talk to.
Like, what do you mean? Yeah. Forbidden smell? They buried it under the ocean or what?
That's right. I mean, I just didn't find like an email address.
It's too powerful for any nose to behold.
Yeah. Well, I wonder like if it's like everything smells really bad, if you could just like toss some olfactory white in and be like, well, everything smells fine.
Yeah.
Not good, not bad. And then as far as smell blindfolds, this isn't a thing that we've been able to create yet. I don't know that people have been trying. Like, it seems like people would be trying maybe, but like anosmia, when you can't smell at all, it's not done because the receptors are like binded to. It's because like the nerve structure gets broken down by usually some disease or chemical exposure. And then the rose thing I just made up. The bokeh made and I made it up together.
Well, it's lovely.
It's just 100% fake. So well, you picked the one that we picked to sound real, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You're both very smart people. So yeah. I don't feel that bad for falling for it.
So we are headed into the break with a score of 0-0. It all hinges on the fact off. Though I will say Sari has a slight advantage because of that poem.
Okay. Well, yeah. Sari, Hank, real fast, tell me what's the easiest choice that you can make of all choices?
The pizza that is currently in the fridge.
Oh, baby, I love to hear that.
Easiest choice? Take a nap, always. What do I want to do? Lay? Nothing.
That's great. Hey, here's a super easy choice, just right off the top of my head. Selling with Shopify. Now, I know all about Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, online or in person, with the internet's best converting checkout, 35% better on average compared to other leading e-commerce platforms. But Hank, why don't you tell us why you and your company, DFTBA, love Shopify so much?
We started DFTBA in 2007, and we had some non-Shopify providers early on, and switching over to Shopify was the best choice that we could have made. Now, we didn't know that when we made it, but it seemed like they knew what was going on and they were going to be around for a long time. And it turned out we were right. And now they really are the industry standard. They have a whole developer ecosystem where lots of people make products inside of their app system. And so you can always add new and cool things into your Shopify so that you can get all of the things that you need to get done for your specific business done. And I feel very kind of grateful that we picked Shopify when we did, so that we have never had to switch, because switching is bad.
Wondering if you should give Shopify a try, like Hank and DFTBA are using it. Let me make that decision a little easier for you. What if all it costs to try it for a month was $1? That's right. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/tangents.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending. I just snapped.
It looked really cool when you did it.
And helps you lower your bills. Subscriptions. Back in my day, the only thing you could subscribe to was the dang newspaper. And we liked it that way. These days, you want anything, you got to subscribe to it. Here, I'm going to enter a random word and the word subscription into Google, and I'll see if there's a subscription for it. Sponge.
Oh,
Wow, I got 3 sponsored results. Oh, live to scrub. Live to scrub? That's not how I feel at all. I feel like I don't live to scrub. I sometimes scrub to live.
You must scrub or else
live
there,
like you're scrubbing.
Live scrub. Else there are consequences. Scrub or else is what it should say.
Subscription services have a way of accumulating up on you. I bet you out there listening have had a subscription that you totally forgot about, just eating up money like a tapeworm in your bank account. One time, I had a cell phone subscription that I had for a whole year that I wasn't using.
Oh, my.
Embarrassing.
What? Did you have an extra phone that you just forgot?
It was for like a little Wi-Fi card that we used while we were on tour.
Right.
I forgot about it.
Well, Rocket Money is here to help flush that tapeworm cell phone service right out.
Oh my God.
A very powerful, very visual metaphor that we've come up with. And I hope that they and you appreciate it instead of being terrified. The Rocket Money app lets you see all of your subscriptions in one place, shows you how much you're spending on subscriptions, and helps you cancel ones that you don't want, like the tapeworm. And Rocket Money shows you all of your spending, helps you budget, helps you save, helps you thrive, helps you evacuate your bowels from a financial perspective, at least. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/tangents.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time for the Fact Off. Our panelists have both brought in science facts in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they have presented the facts, I will judge them and award their Hank Bucks any way I see fit. And to decide who goes first, I have a trivia question. It is that bloodhounds are famous for scent tracking and their noses that do such a good job of that. But bears have a better sense of smell than bloodhounds. Mm. How much stronger is the average black bear's sense of smell than a bloodhound's?
It's probably something big. I'm going to guess 500 times bigger. Better smell?
I'll say 50.
The answer, and you guys got to remember, the answer is always 5. But in this case, it's 7. But if you'd guessed 5, you would have been very close. But the answer is 7. 7 times more powerful than a bloodhound.
Huh.
Which makes me wonder, why do I keep surprising them? Just leave when I'm nearby.
Well, I guess bloodhounds have one job. And that's to sniff stuff. But bears have a lot of other things going on.
They're thinking about other
stuff.
Occupied,
yeah.
The other thing is that like this whole way of comparing isn't one to one. So like bloodhounds can smell some things better than bears can smell them. Mm-hmm. But overall, bears can smell like there is 7 times more sensitivity just in terms of the density of their nervous system. I think.
Is that how they track it? They look
I think
at that
so.
Kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah, they look at like how much of their nervous system is actually like devoted to smelling stuff, which we have much less of. But there are some things that we can smell better than a bloodhound can.
Like beets, right? Is that one of them?
Yeah, like beets for some reason. Anyway, that means that Sam gets to go first or choose who goes first.
I think I will go first. So, you know, in the movie Ratatouille, when
I do.
Ratatouille.
I watched it recently.
The brave little mouse chef, Ratatouille. He's sniffing some soup.
His name is not Ratatouille.
Yes, Ratatouille the mouse. He's sniffing some soup and he's like, oh, this has tomatoes in it and oregano in it. That's something he does in Ratatouille, correct? He knows all the stuff from smelling it. But in real life, rats can also discern incredibly specific and complicated things from smells. But they ain't just smelling if soup has oregano in it. They are smelling concepts. So rats are known to share food, as seen in the movie Ratatouille, when Ratatouille shares food with all his friends.
his name is Remy, and he's a rat, just for clarity. You also called Remy a mouse earlier, which I couldn't even focus on.
So one way they communicate their need for food is with solicitation behaviors, which includes mostly like specific calls and gestures. However, rats are also known to pretend to be hungry and do these solicitation behaviors to try to trick other rats into giving them food. But according to a study in 2020, rats have a way to suss out if their friend is starving to death or just trying to steal food from them. They placed two rats in two smell-proof boxes right next to each other. And one of the rats had a little pulley in its box that was attached to a food tray that, if he pulled it, it would go to the other rat's box and give him food. So the two rats couldn't smell each other, but the researchers pumped in the smell of a rat from a different room, and that rat was either very hungry or had just been fed. So when they pumped in the smell of the well-fed rat, the rat that was smelling the smell would get around to pulling the tray to help his friend eventually, and it would like kind of lazily pull it like 2 minutes later. Then if they pumped in the hungry rat smell, then the rat would immediately start pulling, and it would pull harder and faster on the pulley to get its friend the food.
Oh, wow.
And they weren't just smelling food on the full rat's breath or something like that either, because they used mass spectrometry. And the researchers identified 7 different compounds that are released in more abundance by hungry rats than full rats. But being hungry, maybe that seems like a pretty straightforward condition. And maybe it doesn't seem too weird that you'd be able to smell hungry. But what if you could smell if someone was being helpful? So in a very similar experiment, also done in 2020, but unrelated completely as far as I could tell, researchers found evidence that rats can smell helpfulness in other rats. So they were put in the same exact setup, basically, both in two rats in two different boxes, one with a pulley attached to a food tray. But instead of pumping hungry rat smell in, they pumped in the smell of a rat in a different box in a different room that was helping another rat get food. So it was pulling the pulley. And then when the rat smelled the helpful rat smell, it would trigger that rat to pull its pulley and help its friend. This article was paywalled, so I couldn't figure out like all the mass spectrometry stuff on this one or if they had determined exactly how much faster they were pulling the pulley. But I got to imagine that there were some helpfulness stink particles coming off of the helpful rat. So researchers say these findings could be applied to lots of other animals to help us figure out like complicated social interactions that we don't know about, or it could help us understand some ways that humans perceive the world that we like maybe don't think about the sense of smell as being associated with social interactions too much. And if they make Ratatouille 2, maybe they can have a scene where Ratatouille can smell how disappointed his dad is in him.
That's very weird and very cool. It's weird that like a rat, I mean, I guess it makes sense that like if you're being helpful, you want to have a way to transmit that information versus when you're being antagonistic. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd want to deceive about that if you were an antisocial species. But if you're a social species, you kind of want everybody to be on the same page.
Yeah.
And rats and mice are very, very social. It's super cool.
It makes me think of like, if you had an antisocial species, are we going to find out in a couple hundred years that like cuckoo birds, while they're kicking eggs out of the nest, are like secreting helpful or like gentle nose smells? So it's like, don't worry, as they're like murdering baby
it's
birds.
It's okay, mom.
Yeah.
You don't need these babies.
Yeah. I hope that I emit helpful smells.
I think it'd be really sad if you put me in a box and then a rat started stealing food from another rat. Then that would reinforce everything my therapist says is not true about me.
I mean, a Zoom call is a perfect analogy for this research, where you should have a bunch of like people in a Zoom call, and then you should pump in the smell of a helpful human and see if they treat each other nicer. Because now we're having all these social interactions where we don't get to sniff each other's smells. And so who knows what's happening to our brains? We're not being as nice to each other. We're not helping each other get to food as easily as we would otherwise.
Yeah.
We're not pushing trays of cheese toward each other. It's a disaster. Well, Sari, what are you going to do to Trump Sam's friendly smelly rats.
Sam really brought out the science this week.
Yeah, there's a lot of
mine
science.
Is more of a Sam story, I think,
what
this time.
What's that supposed to mean?
Like straightforward and snappy.
Oh.
Okay. So, like us, non-human animals need play and some things to exercise their brains, also known as enrichment. And I feel like we often see this in the form of physical toys, or at least I think of it this way, like balls or jungle gyms or chew toys. But a big part of enrichment can also be new smells. For example, big cat caretakers, like lions, tigers, or jaguars, often spritz essential oils, perfumes, or colognes to give the cat something to sniff and consider. The cats even rub their cheeks on objects, like house cats might do for a catnip spray, to rub their scent on an object or get a scent that they like on their faces. And, it turns out, one scent that a lot of big cats seem to love is Calvin Klein Obsession for Men. Hashtag not sponsored. And biologists think that the main component of this cologne that makes big cats obsess over it is civet oil. Civets are a vivarid, which are a small to medium size, kind of cat-like, kind of weasel-like mammal. Binturongs are in this family too. And Bizarre Beast did a whole episode on their smelly butts. But civets produce a musky oil from their perineal glands near their butt that humans have harvested for flavors and perfumes for a while, like many animal substances. And specifically, the smelly organic molecule in civets is called civetone, and now we can produce it synthetically from palm oil, so we're not just harvesting from them. And I'm not sure whether Calvin uses the artificial or natural one, but it's in there. Civetone is definitely in Obsession. And when big cats smell civetone, they go wild, maybe because they're often predators of civets and think they smell food, but also they rub their faces all over it. So maybe it has to do with rubbing to take over a territorial marking, and civetone smells like a civet marking territory. And besides olfactory enrichment, this is also really useful for researchers in the field because sometimes they have to set up cameras to capture rare species or behaviors, and a spritz of Calvin Klein's Obsession for Men was the preferred attractant for jaguars to a research site in Nicaragua in, I think, 2013. So they had troubles getting jaguar to the research site. They would spritz it on a tree branch, and then the jaguars would come and rub and, like, be on camera for a long enough time to get captured.
Maybe they just want to smell sexy.
I mean, well, the great thing, so one of the things that is often overlooked in science is that you have to, like, work with what you got to a certain extent. And also, it's like you want your experiment to be repeatable. So if you're saying, like, okay, here's how to make the attractant that we made, and there's like a long procedure, and like you could mess it up, or you can't get all the materials, and like, where do you get civetone? That's a huge problem. Like, it's not just like a pain in the butt. Like, it might make it impossible to replicate your science. But if it's like, go on Amazon and order Calvin Klein's Obsession for Men, anybody can do that. And it's like the same price, and it's like, it's completely achievable, and it works. This is, I loved this. Sam, I loved yours. God damn it. What am I going to do? So we have from Sam, rats can smell concepts, they can smell hunger, they can smell helpfulness, and that's amazing. But Sam constantly called Remy the Ratatouille or something.
Yeah,
and also called Remy a mouse. And Sari discovered that big cats are attracted to the scent of Calvin Klein's Obsession for Men because it contains some kind of civet oil. And look, I think that Sam's fact is slightly better,
but
Sari's poem was amazing, and also Sam insulted Remy, and so I'm gonna make it a tie.
Oh, okay. That's a better outcome than I was expecting. So
yeah, I thought you were going down for Remy Ratatouille.
Yeah,
for personal vendetta.
Congratulations to the both of you, and that means it's time to ask the science couch, where we've got listener questions for our virtual couch of finely honed scientific minds. It's from at Might Be Joe and at MX Demo Unicorn. Is there any particular reason that smells seem to have the strongest ability to generate sensory memories? This is definitely true. It is, like, observably true, and it's certainly in me, and also in people I've talked to before. I think it's a real thing, and I've heard that there's like a, like the brain regions are nearby to each other, but I have only like seen that on sort of like a surface level headline way. I haven't read any actual research about it.
So brain regions is definitely the right direction. And for all that we don't know about smells, it seems like we are pretty sure we have some steps towards understanding why this is. So when we smell, the chemical particle binds to something that gets transmitted to the olfactory bulb in your brain. And the signals are carried from there, I think because it's nearby, to the amygdala, which controls emotions or generally is involved with emotions, and the hippocampus, which is generally involved in learning and memory. Hmm. But non-smell senses, so like sight and taste, first go to the thalamus, which acts like a switchboard for the rest of the brain before going into the emotion and memory centers and like the sense-specific part of the brain to be processed. So scent has like a more direct path to a region that is nearby and interconnected with emotion and memory.
That's wild. So that makes me think that those structures evolved at different times.
Probably. I don't know. I do not feel like I can confidently say expertly in this region, but
yeah,
like chemosensation was one of the earliest things that had to have evolved. It's just like, oh, I'm going to respond to some chemicals. And smell, because it's so complicated, feels like it evolved first and has built up layers of complexity.
Right.
Compared to other senses.
I will still occasionally smell somebody who wears like my high school girlfriend's perfume and be like, stop that. That's not bringing back good memories.
Oh, no.
Well, like that is interesting aspect of it too. And this gets into like the neuroscience of memory. But it seems like oftentimes in studies, smells bring back an emotional response more so than the memory. And so you have like a visceral, like, oh, this is comforting, or oh, this is bad, or oh, this is like weird, rather than being transported back to like a very specific moment of like, this is when for the first time my grandma peeled chocolate chip cookies out of the oven. And so that was interesting to me, where we talk about scent as being linked to memory, but it's really linked to emotion. And then that gets us back to like a cluster of memories.
Wow.
Cool. If you want to ask your question to the Science Couch, you got to follow us on Twitter at @SciShowTangents. We tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Thank you to @ahappily, @JeffLewis, and everybody else who tweeted us your questions this episode. You can also follow SciShow Fangents, which is our fan Twitter that I love. If you like this show and you want to help us out, it's very easy to do that. First, you can go to patreon.com/scishowtangents to become a patron. You can also leave a review wherever you listen. That helps us know what you like about the show and helps other people know what you like about the show. Finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just
tell people about us.
Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Caitlin Hoffmeister and Sam Schultz, who edits a lot of these episodes. Our social media organizer is Paola Garcia Prieto. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish, and we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you, and remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted. But one more thing. Indole is a molecule that often gets added to perfumes and chocolates because of its fruity smell. But in large amounts, it actually smells like poop because it's a chemical that's in poop.
What the?
It's in our poop specifically.
No.
It's not completely clear why small amounts smell good and large amounts smell not good, but that is the case.
Oh, dear.
I don't like that.
I have also read that American chocolate has a chemical in it that is found in vomit, like... but that other places don't have this. So there's like a slightly like acidic taste to our chocolate. So we like poopy, barfy chocolate.
Yeah, I think that's caprylic acid or caproic acid. One of the goat-like acids, because it's like goaty smell / vomit / armpit sweat, etc. Just all the good stuff.
Honestly, I get it. I get it.
I get it too.
You take a funk in the right amount and suddenly it's good.
Sometimes when you eat a fancy chocolate, you're just like, this ain't stanky enough. You waving to a child over there?
Yes, my son just walked into my office.
Give him a mic. What's his favorite smell?
Oren, come here. What's your favorite smell, Oren?
Lilac.
Oh.
Ooh.
He that's just a, said, what?
That's a good smell.
It's lilac. That's a great good smell. One.
Not even any hesitation.
No, no hesitation at all. Must have been sniffing lilacs earlier today. Were you, bud?
Yeah.
Where's Mama? Did she say you could come in here?
I just decided.
You just decided. Okay, I gotta get rid of him. He's getting on the drum set.